Budget Subcommittee. Well, thank you, everybody, for showing up early. A new fisherman wouldn't have a problem making a call. Members present are Representative Seaton, Representative Hughes, Finance Co-Chair Osterman, Stoltz, and Representative Tuck. Welcome. Today we'll have our introductory budget overview and ask the questions that will help set the framework of what we want to, things we want to explore in the budget process, things we think the department should be doing, the fishing game side. Broad questions are just fine, and it will help set the tone and help us. We haven't set the agenda for the rest of the meeting, so your interests and questions will help guide those as we proceed. Commissioner Campbell, welcome. And Mr. Brooks.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Cora Campbell, Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game, and with me at the table is Deputy Commissioner Kevin Brooks, and we're going to be tag-teaming this presentation for you this morning. Also in the audience is our legislative liaison, Ben Mulligan, and Carol Petterborg, who's currently the Acting Director for Administrative Services.
And welcome to the other members of legislative staffs that have expressed some interest in this process. I see one of the senator's staff as well as some of the House members. Thank you for your participation.
Mr. Chair, we've prepared an overview for you today that looks at just some of the structure and functions of the department, goes through each division, talks about some of the issues and challenges we're facing, and highlights some of our budget increments for FY14. And since we have a relatively experienced subcommittee, I'll move pretty quickly through the structure and functions part of the overview so that we can spend a little more time talking about current issues and the 14 budget, if that works for you.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
We don't need to spend time cutting bait, so let's fish.
So we have a PowerPoint we've prepared. I think that's available to the committee members, and there are copies for the public as well on the table. I included the department's mission statement for your information, and the thing that I would note about our mission statement is that it's based on the Constitution Article 8, which talks about natural resources, and also in Alaska Statute Title 16, which talks about the functions of the commissioner and therefore the department. I've also included a listing of our core services. We have six core services. The first is harvest management, and we measure our success at this by what the commercial harvest is, the purchase of hunting and fishing licenses, angler days, and the success that users have. Closely related to our ability to successfully manage harvest is our core service of stock assessment, and we measure this by how well we're meeting escapement goals, meeting or exceeding threshold catch levels, and performing wildlife surveys. The third is customer service. This is a core service that we meet by having programs that are oriented towards teaching angling skills, opportunities for Alaskans to learn about wildlife and wildlife management, and providing information to the public. And that's related to our fourth core service of public involvement. And this is primarily making sure that Alaskans have the opportunity and the information that they need to participate in the Board of Fish and Board of Game regulatory processes, and also making sure that we're involving Alaskans in the decisions that the department makes through outreach efforts. Another of our core services is state sovereignty. We'll talk about this a little bit more later when we get to some of our challenges, but just briefly, we meet this core service by participating in the federal management agency's decisions, supporting the Department of Law when there's a lawsuit, when something needs to be challenged, and representing the state in federal forums like the Federal Subsistence Board. And the sixth is habitat protection. And we measure this by making sure that developers are in compliance with habitat permits that we issue. We've included an organizational chart for your information. This shows that we have the six divisions, one section, and then that there are two independent agencies that are attached to the department for administrative purposes. That's the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council. And we'll get into each of these divisions in a little bit more detail. This map just shows you where our regional and area offices are located. It's color-coded so that you can tell which divisions are represented in each office. We're fairly widespread throughout the state, but these are just our permanent offices, so this doesn't include the locations where we have summer field camps, WIR projects, or those types of things. So moving on to just a brief overview of each division, starting with the commissioner's office, fairly small, 11 positions and making up about 1% of the budget. Commercial fisheries is one of our larger divisions, makes up about 34% of our annual operating budget. This division is responsible for managing all commercial fisheries, but also many subsistence and personal use fisheries. And in some cases, the division also manages shellfish and groundfish fisheries outside of state waters from 3 to 200 miles under agreements with the federal government. Also responsible for conducting research on these resources and permitting both aquaculture and mariculture operations. The Division of Sport Fish is another one of our large divisions, accounting for about 23% of the annual budget. Managing fisheries for sport fishing runs two sport fish hatcheries, one in Anchorage and one in Fairbanks, also responsible for maintaining and improving boater access and angler opportunities. This division is also the department's lead on invasive species issues. It has our water shop in it that participates in permitting for hydro projects, so it has a few related duties. The Division of Wildlife Conservation is our other large management division. They're responsible for management of wild hunting and viewing opportunity, also responsible for implementing intensive management programs in cases where there are low or declining populations that people rely on for human harvest. This division also runs three shooting ranges and conducts hunter ed and safety programs. Subsistence division is one of our smaller divisions. It accounts for only about 4% of the budget. And as you probably know, subsistence division is not a management division, it's a research division. So they're primarily responsible for conducting research and analyzing information about customary and traditional use of Alaska's fish and wildlife resources and providing that information into the Board of Fish and Board of Game regulatory processes. Habitat division is also one of our smaller divisions. It's primarily a permitting division. So they provide permits for activities that affect resident fish, anadromous fish, or take place in special areas. They monitor compliance with those activities. And so that's their primary function. We have an administrative services division that does administrative things, provides administrative support, accounting, budget, HR, those types of functions. And the board support section, it's small. It accounts for only about 1% of the budget, but they're basically responsible for providing logistical support to the Board of Fish and the Board of Game, helping the public get the information they need to engage in that process.
Are these the only two boards that aren't? All the other boards and commissions seem to be self-supporting. That we've made the decision that these will be state-funded. Is that your recollection? That these are the only two boards, Fish and Game?
Mr. Chairman, there's a number of others. One that comes to mind is the Retirement Management Board, the ARM Board, support from the Division of Treasury. So I think there are other examples where there's support provided by a state agency.
I wasn't making an editorial. This is one that needs independence and doesn't.
So, Mr. Chair, I've just listed here the two independent agencies that I mentioned earlier that are attached to us for administrative purposes. We've included some graphs for you that show our budget, both by division and by fund source. And I mentioned earlier that we have three large management divisions, and you can see that commercial fisheries, sport fish, and wildlife conservation
can
account.
We go back to that previous slide?
Certainly.
Exxon Valdez. Is there a... Is that meant to be a agency in perpetuity from now on, or is it?
Mr. Chair, as you know, much of the funding that originally funded that agency has been expended on various research and restoration projects, and so I don't know what the timeline is for the agency to continue. But I do know that they've scaled back operations significantly as a result of the fact that that much of that funding has been expended.
Well, in a future hearing, would you like some philosophy? What we have a perpetuating these boards. We think we bought all the spruce bark beetle we're going to be able to buy and some other. You know. Okay. There are some good functions that have been done by that, but government agencies seem to perpetuate forever, and that this may be okay, but let's. We need to take a look at everything.
Okay. So I think the other thing that I wanted just to mention on this slide is it also shows where our primary funding sources are. At this point, we have about 41% general fund, 29% federal funds, and then a combination of fish and game funds and other funds make up the balance. The next slide talks a little bit about staffing. Again, you can see that most of our staff is in the three larger management divisions, with the other divisions making up a smaller portion. The other thing just to note on this slide is that we have almost as many seasonal positions as we do full-time positions due to the nature of the field season and the work that needs to be done. So the next slides in this presentation are slides that were prepared by Legislative Finance, and Kevin is prepared to speak to those.
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner. For the record, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game. There's four slides in this packet that we've inserted that have been prepared by the Leg Finance Division. And just wanted to point out a few things related to the department's budget as we fit into the broader context of the other state agencies you might be seeing as you go through the budget process. You can see from the graph, this is a general fund growth over about a 10-year period, and the department's budget has grown by about $50 million in that period of time, representing a 9.6% increase. And one of the things that we've seen and some analysis that was done last year in the look back process was that over half of that growth amount was to pay for negotiated salaries that are done through collective bargaining. The commissioner pointed out we have nearly 1,900 employees. And so many of those things were just keeping up with negotiated employee contracts, increased health care, pension contributions, things like that. So there's that piece. And that percentage last year, we're looking to update it, but it was 53% of the overall growth last year was specific to contractual salary increases. The other thing that we've determined and we've seen over the years is that the governor often puts forth initiatives and projects in the budget, and we're going to talk about a few of those too, but there's also a share that the legislature has had interest in various projects as well. And so the remaining increase related to this graph was split about 29% on governor's projects and 16% on legislative add-ons over this period of time. So there's always a lot of interest in the department's budget. Surprisingly or not, we've held steady at about 1.7% of all other agency budgets over the last 6 years. So. It's interesting to see when you take a snapshot over a 10-year period, and I think that's what was intended by these graphs from Wedge Finance. The next one moves to looking at the department's total budget and the composition, and we had a slide on this, a pie chart, and I think noteworthy on this, again, the overall budget has grown, if you added the numbers from 05 to 14 in that 10-year period, total budget is 146.7 million to just under 215 million in the governor's request. But it is comprised of a number of different funding sources. General funds have grown from about 26% to 41%, as noted in the box in the upper left. At the same time, our federal share, which is the green portion at the top there, has reduced from about 40 to 30% of the department's overall budget. While it's reduced, the numbers have actually gone up. It's kind of ironic, but our federal funds have gone from 57 million to 63 million, a relatively small increase in a 10-year period, but as a percentage of the department's budget, it's reduced. The other thing noteworthy, I guess, is that the fish and game funds have been relatively flat, but reduced or declining in the last few years. They were at 26.7 million in 05, and they're at 23.6. And we've seen some of that reduction in the resident sales have been pretty flat, but the non-resident sales have declined in the last few years. And you know, the speculation is that's tied to the national economy, but also as we see cruise ship bookings going up, we anticipate there's a correlation between visitors to the state and the number of non-resident licenses that we sell.
You think it might be lack of opportunity in some regions?
Mr. Chairman, that was the next point I was going to make, is we've seen a decline in king salmon stamps, and that is likely attributable to the challenges with Chinook that we've seen over the last couple of years.
I know a lot of us buy the whole package at the beginning of the year. I haven't hunted in years, but I buy it for the support the conservation efforts and game management. I hate wildlife conservation term. It's game, still in union. But I know, but a lot of folks, they buy their fishing license on their way out to this, like you do a lot of things, your taxes or anything else, right when it's right before you need it. And I bet you find your numbers in the Mat-Su and other areas way off.
Certainly there's a stronger correlation with the king salmon stamps specifically, but also with the general license sales as well. I think your point is a good one.
Representative Osterman.
And I would assume that halibut biomass has created somewhat of that, portion of that anyway, to a certain. I mean, declining halibut is declining opportunity for sport fish as well, so.
It likely is. Again, it's not something that we survey for or that we could really put a number to, but I think that same correlation exists. How strong it is, I couldn't tell you exactly.
And following the co-chair's question on the certainly we've had a game change on the halibut. Looking at the how we're paying off the debt on our hatcheries, a big chunk of it is non-residence license, and when we're seeing a diminution of our charter fleets, especially in the South Central and here. Are you looking at that to erode our ability to keep paying that off at the rate?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the surcharge on the licenses has been fairly steady. I don't have the numbers here, but it's been in the $5 to $6 million range every year, and it's transferred to the bond folks in revenue, and they're paying down paying the debt service on those bonds as on schedule. There's been some early repayments as well on that, and I think I think the early estimates were 2023 or 2024 for repayment, and I think that's closer to 2019 now. So
we actually looked at a time when there were larger capital budgets of paying the whole thing off, and we looked at the numbers of how much it was being paid by non-residents. It just wasn't the most productive way to spend money. I'm sorry, Representative.
No, that's fine. One of the things that through my office anyway, I want to see from each of the departments, and I'll make the request here of your department, that is the declining federal dollars and the increasing GF dollars that we're looking at. When you look at this particular chart here, it stands out right away. Is there a way, Kevin, to go back to 2005 and show the lost funds and where they were, and then how many how much of the of those federal funds are directly related to the increase in GF?
Through the chair, Representative Osterman, we have done some analysis of that, and last year we were kind of digging into, because there's when you look at a 10-year chart, you can see a trend. But as we started to drill down into some of those years, you can see where in certain years, you know, there was some challenges with CRAB out in the Westward region, and some general fund was brought in for a very specific purpose. But what we have found is our general fund comes from primarily three sources. We have the DJ money, Dingell Johnson money, and Sportfish, the Pittman Robertson and Wildlife, and then we get funding through the Department of Commerce on some of the commercial fishing endeavors that we do. The DJ and PR money has been fairly stable. I mean, we've had some reductions in on the Sportfish side in recent years, but on the Wildlife side, with guns and ammunition, it's derived from guns and ammunition sales, that revenue has been going up. And so those two sources, they're dedicated for the states for for purposes that we use them for, and we haven't seen the volatility in those federal funds. Now, from the Department of Commerce, we have seen some reductions there, but what we've tried to do in some of the like Sustainable Salmon Fund and things like that are capital in nature. They're projects with finite duration, and when the projects are over and the funding's gone, we end them. You know, so we've had some reliance on core programs, and in fact, we'll talk about that in one of our increment requests too, where we just can't walk away from the work. But to the extent we can, we've tried to keep those projects very distinct, very finite, so that they're not going to be a drain on the general fund if that's at all avoidable.
And I understand that, but I I don't remember where it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we had an $8 million, I think it was a $7 or $8 million shortfall coming from Sustainable Salmon Fund. I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly that the request was to put GF in there to cover that. And so I know there's certain issues in certain areas where we've gone through, and we're seeing it more and more with other departments that are coming forward at this point in time in this budget cycle, with constant requests to replace federal dollars on projects. So what I'm trying to do is get some kind of a historic look at it and put it in perspective of where the state needs to address this issue across the board with every department and come up with a policy or a philosophy or something to address the declining federal dollars versus how much more GF we have to continue to put in.
I think we can pull some of that information together and provide that to you and to the subcommittee. One of the things that I think I'd like to point out is while we're not seeing huge reductions, we've seen some, but what we're not getting is increases on that federal funding. So if we have a cost of living adjustment that's negotiated in a labor contract and it's a 2% COLA or something like that, our positions are in the budget as 75-25 federal and fish and game funds, and so when that gets spread across the budget, it's based on a prorated share of how that position is funded. And if we're not able to increase that 75% share of that position, and that's the case for a lot of our positions, that's a dollar we're going to have to absorb or cut a project or shorten a project or something like that. So not so much a cut, but we're not keeping up with the inflationary pressure and how we've paid these positions historically. And so that does present a challenge to the department.
Good. Thank you.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, with that 53% increase in the salaries, wages, and health and welfare and pensions, it'd be nice to see if we can get a 10-year period of the employment of personnel, and how many employees you have, so we can compare.
Actually, that's in one of the packs of charts from the Legislative Finance Division. We could certainly make that available.
Okay, thank you.
And going back to you referenced the Pittman Robertson, the Dingell Johnson, and the I think the Wallet Borough funds as well. Well, and those have been increasing. Anybody that's what the president's done for us lately, he's got us a lot of revenues through those gun sales, the other parts of your budget, the on the commercial side, that industry gets a large voice in directing how those funds are spent. What I have heard from the sportsmen's users and the folks that pay those taxes, they are seeking a larger voice and making sure that those are directed towards actual sport, actual activities to buttress recreational sport fishing in the non-commercial side. And we're going to delve into that later, and there'll be some folks participating on that. There have been some concerns expressed about your tighter budgets, maybe some of those funds being earmarked away from the intended sources. So we'll delve into that in future meetings.
Moving on to the next slide here, we have two line graphs here. The first one is trying to take that 10-year history and then project that out to 10 years. And this is for general funds only, and you can see that with the department's growth rate of 9.6%, if that was to continue, it would be the green line that slopes up to the right. We've done our 10-year plan, and we have some things that we've calculated into that, and I can point a couple of those out. Again, what the lower line doesn't include is those unknown future contract negotiations, and there's just no way of doing that. And so that is probably the largest difference between those two lines, because it's subject to labor negotiations, and it's in a period in the future. There's negotiations are going on currently with the GGU and SU units, so it's something handled in the department.
A lot of departments do that don't do as good a job on the statutory requirements and the 10-year projections. You guys, as I've seen, do a pretty good job. So
what we do, Mr. Chairman, while we don't include those labor negotiations, we do include a 2.75% inflation rate on our non-personal services. We also have looked at what we've come to the legislature for in the last year or two as far as our federal funds and where we think we're going to have. We have some core programs that are funded by some federal funds that may result in a request to you. And so we pegged that at $1 million for 15, 16, and 17, the next 3 years. Don't know what it will be, but we wanted to put it on there because it's been a topic of discussion. And finally, because we've seen initiatives by both the governor and the legislature, we've estimated that 2% of our total general fund would be some initiative, some project that's going to be current to whatever the issues are. And so that's about $1.6 million a year. And again, we're trying to be realistic about what's happened in the past and give some responsible projection of that into the future. And so there's a disparity, you know, the lines diverge, but we have tried to roll in things that we think are out there or that are there's some likelihood that they could happen. So that's how we arrived at our trend line.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just for clear explanation for me then, the dotted lower line, the projection includes $1.6 million for an estimated per year for an estimated initiative such as the King Salmon money. Is that what we're talking about there? Are we talking about some other initiative?
Well, the King Salmon money actually is a capital. So the Chinook initiative that we have is in our capital budget. This would be things where we're, you know, in the past we've had money put in for, you know, a shrimp survey or, I don't know, you could pick a project. But there's any number of projects that are of interest to either the department or the legislature that have been funded. And typically it's $100,000 to $200,000 to put a project in the water. And that's just a ballpark estimate of what we might have before us in future years. It's not tied to any specific project at this time.
A follow-up. So the $1.6 million, is that an annual increment that is in for each one of these years? And there was another figure as well that you had incorporated, estimated incorporation.
1.6 for each year, and then $1 million for 15, 16, and 17, speculating that there could be some tightening on the federal side, and that's a, you know, about a 30% share of our budget. So,
thank you.
And then, you know, the last
again, I The answer might have confused me more. Is that growth, or is that employee growth administering this $10 million bucks a year? Because I know you don't. I've never seen the department spend money without administrative costs. Well, how's that going to be reflected in your operating budget? Or are you going to? Is there going to be a scrape off of that? And how much is that going to be for ADF&G employees, employee costs, and so on? Operating costs.
Mr. Chairman, there would not be an administrative overhead on the $10 million Chinook initiative. I mean, we have staff. There's certainly going to be procurement involved. There's going to be hiring involved. We're trying to do that with vacant positions. But people are going to step up and do that work. We're going to put that in projects in the field and not into administrative costs.
We'll see. That's
okay, and then I guess the last point
you're saying you're not DOT.
we do assess on federal funds. We do assess administrative overhead on federal, but typically not on a general.
Well, that one I'm having a hard time. So we'll hear what you have to say.
Okay. Finally, the last point I'd make on this chart is that it starts in 05. I think that was specifically chosen by Ledge Finance as the last year there was a flat budget. And so this is actually the last 10 years of our period of growth that the state has, and growth in budgets that the state has experienced. You know, a different time period might show different slope on that line, but it is what it is, and so we're responding on the time frames given. And then the last chart in this package is all funds. And the only point I'd make on this is you see a closer convergence on these two lines when you're looking at total funds as opposed to just general funds.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, the rest of the presentation includes some accomplishments, some issues and challenges, and then some discussion of our increments. So, speaking first to some of our accomplishments in the past year, we wanted to note for you some improvements that have been made to our salmon research program, perhaps most notably the completion of a very comprehensive genetic sampling program for chum and sockeye in Western Alaska. That's known as the WASIP, or the Western Alaska Salmon Stock ID Program, and that program's completed and has generated a series of reports that are being used right now by the Alaska Board of Fisheries as they go through their cycle of making management decisions for the Western Alaska area. But there are also some other projects that we wanted to note, including we're doing adult and juvenile mark recapture and coded wire tagging for Chinook and Coho in Southeast. We have a mark recapture for Coho and Chum in the Susitna River to estimate the in-river abundance, and a coordinated project between the fish divisions to look at Chinook abundance for the Nooshigak and the Lewis and Theodore Rivers. I also wanted to just call out our intensive management programs. The intensive management laws, obviously passed by the legislature, but something that the governor and the administration strongly support. We're implementing intensive management programs aimed at increasing caribou or moose numbers in a number of GMUs. And just some things to point out, we've been doing a program on the Southern Alaska Peninsula on that caribou herd. We've seen a dramatic turnaround in the size of the herd. It's about a 50% increase, and it's once again providing subsistence opportunity. We've also seen really good success with moose programs in 20A, B, and D. Those are providing elevated harvest numbers as a result of our efforts. We're still working on refining some of our intensive management programs in some areas. 16B is a good example of an area where we still have challenges. The wolf control efforts have been fairly successful, but we know that bears are responsible for a large amount of predation in that area, and so we're looking at how we can refine that program to be more effective.
I can tell you just anecdotally, I hear from hunters about their appreciation of that program, that areas that were pretty barren of wildlife, they see they're turning a corner. For all the bad publicity you've taken from some corners, and I think it's been cheap shots, I think you've done sometimes the most important work is the unpopular work, and I think Alaskans are by and large with you, rural and urban, at the end of the day. So I stay the course. I think that's your bigger success more than I don't have a lot of accolades for us who sit in the drainage management, but surrounding hunting, your department gets really high marks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For the second part, right?
I also wanted to note for you some improvements in our subsistence harvest survey. One of the things that we noted that needed improvement was that a lot of the data that Subsistence Division was relying on was, in many cases, 25 years old for some communities, or we had no data for some communities. So we made a concerted effort with the help of the legislature to shore up the funding for that division. And that division has also made an effort to coordinate with DNR or DOT where there's a large development project going on. Subsistence information is now important in the permitting process. That information is needed for permitting. So by having Subsistence Division involved in those types of projects, we're able to have the dual benefit of providing the information that's needed for permitting to go forward and also to update our database that the Board of Fish and Board of Game rely on for making decisions about amount necessary for subsistence or providing subsistence opportunities. So a number of communities were surveyed in 2012, and we have more of that planned in the future. I also wanted to note our habitat permitting function. Again, that's something where we noted a need for some more resources for that division, given some of the large development projects that are in the pipeline that are going to require habitat permitting, and a need that had been identified for habitat staff to become more involved early in the project design process rather than when they actually get into applying for a permit. So
are there funding sources from some of those large projects like Watonna and others, and can you give us an accounting of how some of those funds, how those are infiltrating your department or being used?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do receive funding through IA receipts for some of these projects. If something is being permitted through OPUMP in DNR, they have the ability to help support some of our activities. We also have some IA receipts right now from AEA for the Susitna-Watonna project. So that is a funding source for us. Also with some of the ongoing projects, for example, Kensington, there's some funding that comes in for our monitoring activities out there. So we do try to access those sources when they're available to support the increased workload. And I also just noted that the sport fish hatchery production, we do finally have both the William Jack Hernandez hatchery in Anchorage and the Ruth Burnett sport fish hatchery in Fairbanks online and producing fish. We're at the stocking levels that we were at before we lost our heat source from the old Elmendorf hatchery. And I think that, you know, we've gotten feedback from anglers that they're appreciating the opportunities that they have as a result of those stocking programs.
We're hoping to have somebody from ICER or somebody in the budget process. Do you have any idea, even a ballpark, what the economic value of that mudflat fishery is at Ship Creek, is it?
Mr. Chair, I don't know the value for that specific fishery. One of the things that we'll talk about a little bit when we get into some of our increment requests is that a desire to have an overall look at the economic contributions of our stocking program so that we can get a better feel for that. So moving on to some of the bigger issues and challenges that we face as a department, the first one on this list is Chinook salmon abundance and productivity. I think you're all aware of some of the challenges that have been faced in the state, the severe impacts to all users as a result of reduced Chinook abundance. And we'll talk more when we get into the budget increments about the Chinook research plan that the department has proposed to shore up our ability to understand what's happening there and to respond. But I just want to note that outside that research planning process, we're also taking a look at our ability to make management changes in the short term to provide more opportunity in a time of decreased productivity, and also looking at the potential for increased stocking and enhancement as a more short-term action while the research program is ongoing and while we're learning more about the causes.
Representative Osterman.
Commissioner, what is the time frame for showing us what the plan is to spend $30 million over 3 years?
Through the chair, Representative Osterman, we are just putting the finishing touches on the plan as we speak. We sent it out for peer review, so we had three independent reviewers take a look at it. Even though university scientists and federal scientists were involved in development of the plan, we wanted to make sure that it had a thorough peer review because it is a high-dollar initiative. So our scientists are just finishing incorporating the results of that peer review, and we anticipate having copies of that. The draft is out now, but having copies of the final for you next week so that you can take a look at the projects by region and the research that's suggested in the marine environment, the genetics work, the coded wire tagging, all the elements of that plan.
Thank you.
I just want to, that's going to be a capital budget item, but it's integrally involved in our decision making here. We're looking at $30 million. I'd like to be able to explain to the folks back where I'm from what $30 million buys you, what the if I can get some numbers on the historic economic value of the commercial fisheries for Chinook, the sport fish values of Chinook, and you know, when we're talking $30 million, we need a lot of data, and not just it's beyond anecdotal because there are serious problems. I know, but I think for appropriations of that amount, We need the data to explain to the public what we're doing, and that we're doing it for a breadth of Alaskans, and to have the confidence level. So we need your help and others' help in putting that data together and why this is justified. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's very appropriate. And the other portion that I hopefully would see was what we're currently spending on Chinook research and how that dovetails into the proposal. So not just one project isolated, but how that fits into the current Chinook research that we're doing and what that level of funding is.
And I have no expectations that allocation would be directed to the highest economic uses. So but we get to do the best we can, right? Because I don't have a voice in that.
So, Mr. Chair, we'll provide more information about that as we go along. As you know, an attempt was made to estimate the economic impact just in 2012, just in the Upper Cook Inlet fisheries, and the total was in the tens of millions of dollars. And obviously, it's very difficult to really capture the full economic impact because of some of the indirect effects. So
there are some tangibles, though. Direct tax benefits to the state as well, both designated funds and important to a lot of Alaskans. What's the value of unrestricted general funds that make it the revenue for all Alaskans from this industry, both sport and commercial? So all those things I think the public deserves to know. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've also noted here as one of the issues that we're dealing with is our desire to provide increased fishing opportunity and increased economic opportunity, and we've taken an approach in recent years with the support of the legislature where we've tried to identify instances where if our stock assessment was not as good as it could be on a species or had eroded over the years because of inflationary pressures that was leading to more conservative management and possibly foregone opportunity, and we've tried to shore those things up to provide additional opportunities, and so we have some new projects in the water this year that are focused on those things. Demersal shelf rockfish in Southeast Alaska is one example. And so that's something that we're going to be continuing to look at is places where perhaps a small investment in a stock assessment could pay off in a lot of opportunity for Alaskans. Related to that is the third thing that I've listed here, and that's a reduction in some of our tools that are available for salmon management. And I think the point that I want to make here is that as we face inflationary pressures as we absorb increased costs into our budget. Often the result of that is that maybe we have a weird project that we used to run for 2 months that now we're running for 6 weeks or 4 weeks, or maybe, you know, a sonar is coming out early, or if it gets extreme, sometimes a project can be taken out of the water altogether. And the impact of that, of not having the assessment on the shoulders of the season, or not having all the projects in the water that we used to, is again, it leads us to be more conservative in our management if there's greater uncertainty, and it can lead to lost opportunity. So one of the things you'll see when we get into the budget discussion is an attempt to shore up some of these salmon, in-season salmon management tools that have been eroded over the years. A big challenge for us is, I noted earlier that we have one of our core responsibilities is to defend our right to manage our resources, and we're finding that to be something that's really under attack all the time, either through federal land management decisions that want to set aside more wilderness designations, want to remove our ability to manage wildlife, or through Endangered Species Act designations that either set aside large swaths of Alaska as critical habitat, or put a species under federal control.
I think that's one of the unsung successes of the department, the work that you've helped the Department of Law with on early intervention, on stopping bad decisions from being implemented by coming up with the science. Mr. Vincent Lang, I think, has done some very quiet and effective work, and it's looking forward to talking a little bit about that in the budget process too. It's your department has a lot of roles in things we do, and it helps buttress the litigation funding we get for the Department of Law, makes it more effective. So I think you need to sing that success a little more, because there's a lot of support for that in this building.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As you noted, we have worked with the support of the legislature, to focus more on proactive research. If we see a species that we think is a candidate for listing or something coming down the road, we're trying to put more good science on the table to be part of that discussion. And we have had some recent victories. The polar bear critical habitat decision was a very important one for us, where the court vacated that rule and said that you can't just designate 187,000 square miles without showing that there are elements there that are important to polar bear conservation. And we had a partial victory as well in the Stellar Sea Lion lawsuit, where a court found that the federal agency had violated process and sent them back to do the appropriate NEPA review. So we are seeing some successes, but I guess I remain very concerned about the impacts of Endangered Species Act listings. And the reason for that is the precedent that's been set by federal agencies to list a species that's stable, it's healthy, there's no decline, maybe there's not even any threat identified for the next 50 years, but in the future, due to some computer modeling exercise and some speculation about potential future climate change, they can say that there's a possibility of decline, and that's now a justification for listing. We now know that they want to list ice seals. There are 3 to 7 million of those critters. If you can list a species as endangered that's population numbers in the millions and isn't showing a declining trend, we're very concerned about where that stops. I think
that's something you need to talk about. I think your department is too often identified a perceived rogue habitat biologist that's slowing down a project, and that can be a misapprehension when you're doing work that's promoting responsible development. As you're looking for these increments, don't be afraid to tell the good stories.
Chairman.
Representative Osterman and Seaton.
You're expressing your concerns. Are those expressed in your budget request as well?
Through the chair, Representative Osterman, we've had, last year we had an increment to shore up our endangered species program. So we have We have a couple of new staff that are now dedicated to following these federal processes, preparing state comments, making sure that we're there every step of the way. So we don't have anything in the budget this year, but we did receive, with the support of the legislature, an increment last year to fund new research for some of these candidate species.
I'll just interject. Do you get some receipts from the overall statehood defense, the Department of Law? Do you get any support? I'm trying to remember. I've dealt with the law budget.
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I know we work closely with them. We have some RSAs with law. We can certainly get back to you on that.
Okay. Well, that's again, make it. That's one of the things you're doing really, really well. It's it gives us a chance to talk less about Sioux Center drainage. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One other aspect of that I'm very concerned about is us adequately challenging the critical habitat areas, such as the beluga whale designation, where the designation for critical habitat was the maximum habitat that was ever utilized by that population. And I think that overreach for critical habitat being that the entire area where the animals were ever seen at their height is a very much an overreach. And also, if it went beyond that area, it would mean that it wasn't a separate population at all. So I hope that as we go forward, we look for reasonable restrictions on critical habitat area, as well as just on populations that are large, because I think it's critical that if there is going to be a critical habitat designation, it is truly critical habitat and not wherever the whatever habitat was ever occupied. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I've also listed here one of the issues that we deal with is the issue of invasive species. And the department over the past few years has been dealing with a number of invasives. One that's probably known to many of you is that we had an invasive tunicate in Whiting Harbor near Sitka. We received some funding in the capital budget last year to deal with that. We've completed a survey of the area, mapped its distribution, and we're now getting ready to issue an RFP for eradication of that invasive. We've also spent a great deal of time and effort working on, I guess I would call it suppression of northern pike in some of the Cook Inlet drainages. We don't call it eradication because there's some uncertainty that we could ever fully remove pike, but the idea is to try to suppress the population enough that some of our other stocks, like king salmon stocks, at least have a fighting chance in those drainages. And so we have a fairly extensive program going on in Alexander Creek, for example, and we have seen some increase in the number of king salmon smolt that are surviving as a result of those efforts.
Last year, on another piece of legislation, the full House Finance Committee, it's one of those rare moves, 11 members co-sponsor an amendment for a more aggressive invasive species in our non-marine waters, and that ended up demise somewhere else in the building after strong support here and elsewhere. Is that an effort you continue to support? We were to trot that out again?
Through the chair, I do
or
think...
Or are those 11 people all misguided?
Well, I do think that invasive species is a threat to our ecosystems, and that we've been fortunate so far that we haven't had more severe problems than we have. I guess Elodia is a good example in my mind of a freshwater invasive, and we just signed an MOU with DNR and DEC about how we're a plan of attack essentially for dealing with that invasive plant. But I do think it's something that's going to require more attention in the future, yes.
Well, there are members that are interested. We'll see. And I think we used your vehicle, as I recall, Representative Seaton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we have updated that, and so we'll be bringing that forward.
Mr. Chair, the last thing that I've called out here is the need for licensing modernization. We have a fairly outdated licensing program for our hunting and fishing licenses, and we have a lot of separate systems for things like McNeil bear viewing permits or other things. And so what we're looking to do here is develop a modern system that has the ability to do some things that we'd like to do, in addition to modernizing our licensing process, also to provide for things like online harvest reporting for personal use fisheries, electronic logbooks, some of those things that we've been hearing from the public that they'd like to see. Do you want to add to that, Kevin?
Thanks, Commissioner. I think the primary focus here is, you know, we currently sell about 700,000 licenses a year, or endorsements. It could be a King Salmon stamp or something like that, but it's largely a paper process, and it's been...
Mine was decorative last year.
So we sell about maybe under 15% of our licenses are sold over the internet, and a lot of people like to go into their favorite store and get outfitted for the year and buy their license, but we think, you know, we have heard from a lot of folks in the public that modernizing that, making it compatible with mobile devices and just bring it into the 20th century or 21st century would be a big improvement. And also our vendors. We have over 1,000 vendors, and just automating some processes for them, because as the commissioner pointed out to us recently, you know, it's a paper process and it's a carbon paper process. I mean, and so we're looking at what other states are doing and trying to learn from those best lessons and implement some of those in Alaska. Not without its challenges because of our lack of internet coverage all across the state, but certainly we can hit it in areas where the technology is available. So it's a long overdue project, and one we hope that you'll support.
Thank you. One of the issues that I hope you look forward to be an analysis of the license we passed, the dude fishing license, the 7-day commercial license, and the serial nature of those, and finding out how many non-residents are able to take advantage of that and have their whole commercial fishery license paid at less than or the same as residents. And what the impact and utilization of that 7-day license is, you know, how many residents are using those, how many non-residents. I mean, we should be able to quantify by how many people got those that also qualified for a PFD, so we can see whether that's predominantly being a way around our license fees for non-residents, so that they, you know, basically can pay less than residents for the same activities. So if you would prepare that, I'd appreciate that, and we'll be looking at that.
I think we ought to be cautious. We have a U.S. or a state Supreme Court that is very fondly protective of out-of-state commercial fishermen from some of the litigation money we've had to pay.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Seaton, we have spent time internally looking at that issue, so we have some of those numbers pulled together where we tried to quantify the extent to which that program was being used for its intended purpose versus being used in ways that perhaps were not anticipated when the legislature passed it. And so we can easily provide some of that information to you because we've been looking at it ourselves.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, and my question here is the financial impact of that on people not buying the full non-resident commercial license, and whether that impact, you know, is a loss of revenue to the department and to the Fisherman's Fund, our insurance plan that we do, and whether we've got a liability there that we're accepting that we're not even recovering enough money to pay for. So appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So
closing.
So, Mr. Chair, we have, I think, maybe two more slides that talk about budget highlights. Did you want to get into that
please,
now?
Please, go ahead and finish up. I thought before you said you were right. No, go ahead. I want you to finish your program.
Okay, thank you. So we've pulled out here some of the highlights of our operating budget request for 14. And a large part of what we're doing here, as we discussed a little bit earlier, is we're trying to adjust to some of the shifts that we've seen in our federal funding sources and the availability of federal funds, both increases and decreases in federal funding require adjustments on our part. And the other theme here is what we talked about earlier, where some of our in-season salmon management tools have eroded over time. And so by region, we've gone through and tried to identify things that would result in more opportunity if we were able to restore them. And you'll see some of those increments. So there's 1.15 million for salmon research and management projects, including southeast salmon stock identification. That's something that has been federally funded in the past, and those funds are no longer available. So that's something that we're looking to supplement. And internally, when we see federal funds declining or expiring or they're no longer available for that purpose, our test is really whether what's being funded is part of our core services before we ask for a general fund backfill. And in this case, it is. This is pretty core to our sockeye stock assessment in southeast Alaska, so that one did make the list. This Susitna River drainage sockeye project is something that had been done in the past, again through AKSSF, but through Cook Inlet Aquaculture, and again those funds are no longer available. But this information is critical to our management of those stocks. We also have a request to shore up some of our assessment programs in the AYK region and the Westward region, and those are more related to this erosion over time than they are to any need to adjust to federal funding. Within the Division of Sport Fish, I think you're familiar that Sport Fish has seen some budget pressures lately, both as a result of some declines in federal funding and also declines in the revenue from the Fish and Game Fund because of declining license sales, which are their two big revenue sources. And so what we looked at with that division this year was they currently have housed, as I mentioned earlier, the Aquatic Resources Project. We informally call it our water shop, but they're primarily responsible for in-stream flow reservations, so trying to ensure that when there are water withdrawals from a stream that there's enough left to support the baseline fish populations. And that's a project that really has benefits far beyond recreational fisheries. it benefits all fisheries, and it benefits the permitting process for development projects. And so that's something that we had identified as a good candidate for general fund funding in the face of declining funds being available to Sport Fish Division. In Division of Wildlife, we actually have the opposite situation. As you mentioned earlier, Mr. Chair, there have been increases in gun and ammunition sales. That results in an increase in the federal funds that are available to the Division for Wildlife Management, but those do require a state match. So what you see here is actually $2 million in federal funding and then a request for $500,000 in state match so that we can access some of those increased federal funds and use it for additional wildlife management, particularly looking at funding some biometrics work to shore up some of our assessment programs and some education work. And then we've also noted here an increment for Division of Habitat for participation in Title 16 and 41 reviews and permitting. And that's some money that was received last year as a one-time item that we've had some discussion about. Funds that used to be received under Forest Resources Practices Act or ACMP that are no longer available to the division, but the work continues. And so looking to continue that funding. Did I miss anything, Kevin? Okay, and then we just have just one more here on some of our larger capital projects. We talked a little bit earlier about the Chinook Salmon Initiative, and I think we'll probably talk about that some more, but essentially that's an effort we went through that identifies 12 indicator stocks throughout the state that are important Chinook stocks and makes recommendations for increased research on those stocks to understand sources of mortality throughout their life cycle. So a better understanding of escapements, harvests, marine survival, smolt out migration, all those things that would lead to a better understanding of where the increased sources of mortality are and what's affecting productivity. And the idea of the plan overall is to gain a better understanding of the factors that are driving productivity so that we can adjust our management accordingly. I've also noted here that we're requesting funding for our aerial photosynthesis capability for wildlife. You know, the primary way that they do stock assessment on caribou is aerial overflight, where they take photos and they take them back, and they actually are counting the caribou from these photos. They're using cameras that are decades old. The film for them is no longer produced. And
this film is probably pretty telling.
So we have a request in to upgrade that to digital equipment that'll really assist with those surveys. I mentioned earlier that we had some work that we wanted to do regarding some of the economics of sport fishing. And you probably recall that about 5 years ago we did the first economic impact of sport fish survey. At that time, the idea was that that would be repeatable, and it would be repeated every 5 years so that you could look at changes over time and trends. And so the request for that funding is in there. And we also talked about already about the need for a fish and game licensing modernization. And so there's a GF request in for that project. It's going to be an expensive project, so in addition to the GF, there's also a reappropriation of some unspent funds to complement that. And then I've just noted on this slide some recurring capital projects, things that you see on an annual basis, such as our boater access funds, again primarily federal, but looking for a GF match for those. The deferred maintenance, which is part of the governor's 5-year deferred maintenance plan, and then an annual request for maintenance and repairs on some of our facilities, vessels, and aircraft. So those were the highlights that I wanted to note for you in the budget, and that was really all we had for you this morning.
Well, one thing we're going to do is we're going to redefine core missions of your department, and we're going to call them CORA missions now, and so we're going to put you to work. So. That any other questions, takeaways?
The state of Alaska manages crab fisheries outside of state waters. And is there an MOU or some type of an agreement? And then there's there federal dollars that come with that for the management outside of three?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Osterman, we can recover some of the costs of managing those fisheries. There's an assessment on the fleet post-rationalization. There's an assessment, and we can recover some of the costs through that are related to implementation of the rationalization program. Some of our other costs are not recoverable. We used to receive more federal funding from Department of Commerce than we do now for management of those fisheries, and Kevin may have more details on that specifically.
Mr. Chairman, that's accurate what the Commissioner said. We didn't bring that with this for this presentation this morning for the overview, but could certainly provide that, you know, historic levels of funding and what we're doing now and how we're covering. We still do receive federal funds, but at a reduced level on that particular fishery. And it's one we operate, we do manage that fishery under a delegation.
So those are more lingering Ted Stevens withdrawal symptoms, right? Representative Osterman and then Seaton.
Yeah, just during the process that we go through the subcommittee, I'd like to get into that a little bit more, including the test fishery charges and any fee that assess the fishermen themselves for those fisheries.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Osterman, one of the things that I didn't note on this sheet, but one of the things that you'll see as we get deeper into the budget is that there is a request for increased test fish authority in the Westward region, because this year specifically, we have federal funds that are no longer available for doing the observer training for that program, and so that's something that you'll notice and we'll talk about.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And can we get tables or pages 16 and 17? That's the pie chart overviews that are for 14. Can we get those for 13 as well to make those comparisons?
Certainly.
And, Mr. Chairman, one other question. And that would be for, you know, since there's such a large percentage of salary changes in the budget over time, can you go back for this last year and let us know the salary increases by division and regions, and so we can see those changes and what they're in effect and how that would affect if we were flat budget funding in the future, whether we would have to restrict positions or something else based on those increases. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hughes. Yeah. I forgot you were there.
Yeah, I've been hiding behind you. Thank you, and I am the newcomer here, and I I will ask to meet with you afterwards. There's a few things that I need to get up to speed on. For instance, there were acronyms in the fund sources, and I don't know what all those stand for, but I'll get with you later on that. But I did have a very general question. On page 23, you have issues and challenges, and I'm wondering whether you feel like the budget you're presenting covers all those and addresses all those, or are there any you're still concerned about?
Your OMB answer and then your other answer, what's the...
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, I apologize for the use of acronyms, and I'm certainly happy to go over any of this with you that you'd like to. What I would say about this is that our budget request is closely aligned with what we see as our biggest issues, so that you'll see that there's money in the budget for Chinook salmon, that there's money in the budget for to address some of these reductions we've seen in our salmon management tools. There's money in the budget for licensing modernization. And as I said, we received an increment, several increments last year to provide increased opportunity, and an increment last year for Endangered Species Act work. So overall, I would say that our budget request is aligned with what we see our biggest challenges being.
Thank you.
Any other questions before the commissioner leaves us until next time? One thing I had meant to mention, I'd like, and I don't think it'd be appropriate to have names, but your a list of the amount of retire hires you have in the positions within your department. That's okay. Been an overall issue that folks have had questions about in general state government. It's a fishing game. I've anecdotally have heard you have a lot of those, but I don't know, and I'd like to be able to respond to those questions when people ask. Any other things you're certainly welcome to ask Commissioner Campbell offline, as Representative Hughes, as to... This is an involved process. Everybody is here because of their interest in the resource, and you know, so looking forward to the participation of the committee. We will set the, I don't have the schedule. We're moving, trying to schedule these around all the other moving pieces and schedules. We are not going to be meeting at 7 a.m. very often, so if that's of any comfort to anybody. I know, I appreciate everybody was here on time, so that's we'll probably be doing a couple of evening meetings to allow some participation of folks that do things like work during the day. And it's and I will at my intent to try to get the folks that the gentleman that did the ICER economic study is now ahead of the newly appointed head of the institute. Might be easier to get him here. And economics of our fisheries is important. And I'd be remiss. We will probably have at least a day's focus talking to concerns about a region close to Representative Hughes and I. And that's, as you said, a drainage. And the concerns of the, our Matsu Borough is very involved with a fully staffed and active, publicly supported Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I'd be remiss if I didn't give them a chance to showcase for at least an hour or so. I just want to give heads up on that, and if anybody else has other folks they'd like to have participate in the process that we benefit from hearing from, just let me know, and we'll do our best to try to work that in. With that, we are adjourned until we meet again.